Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to thank you for joining us today on the show. Now, for those of you who want to catch up on our previous episodes, remember to check us out at voanews.com. We are also on all social media platforms like YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Also on Twitter at Upfront Africa. Now, it's been almost a year since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic. And since then, millions of lives have been affected in so many different ways, with over 100 million cases globally and over 2 million dead due to the deadly virus. There is no doubt that we still have a long way to go in containing the pandemic. The good news is that many countries have started on the long process of vaccinating their populations against the virus. And however, it's also a fact that many other countries, especially in Africa, don't have access to the new vaccines. And that means that for the foreseeable future, life on the continent, as elsewhere in the world for that matter, will continue to experience economic hardship due to public health restrictions like lockdown, travel restrictions, and others. And experts say that for a continent that was already grappling with all kinds of challenges, including conflicts in areas like the Horn of Africa, this year, 2021, will be tough to navigate. On today's show, we will look at education, given that the majority of the continent is below the age of 25 and many of these young people are in school or supposed to be in school. We will look at the impact of the pandemic on education in Africa. In much of the continent, students return to school after months at home as they try to catch up with their studies. Many others are still unable to gain access to education that is both inclusive and equitable, as set out in the UN Sustainable Development Goals. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is raising the alarm on this specific issue, warning that as the world continues to battle the pandemic, education must be protected to avert what he calls a generational catastrophe. His plea is echoed by the UNESCO's 2020 Global Education Monitoring Report. That report says that only 10% of countries globally have laws that help ensure full inclusion in education. And when it gets to Africa, that situation is a little more dire. Manos Antoninis is one of the authors of this UNESCO 2020 Global Education Monitoring Report. He joins me from Paris. Manos, welcome to Upfront. Glad you could join us to speak to us about this report and some of the issues it raises in regard to the state of global education, especially in Africa, where limited resources and what many call an antiquated education system leaves so many young people behind, with many excluded because of background and ability. What are some of the findings of this report, and why should we be worried about the state of education?
Well, the Global Education Monitoring Report produces several documents that are for the benefit of the international community. We are the report that the world's governments have entrusted and mandated to report on progress in education all over the world. So we have our annual publication, which has a theme every year. For instance, the theme of this year's report was inclusion in education. And it hit us at the time of the COVID-19 crisis, a moment when it became clear to everyone that those inequalities that we already had and we were suffering from in society, and particularly in education systems, became far worse.
It became amplified. The issues became more amplified because of the pandemic.
So in we're trying, all over the world, we're trying to understand exactly how the pandemic is hitting education systems. And it's not an easy task, because there's so many different ways in which children and families are affected, and the education futures and trajectories are in peril. So there are all sorts of ways. But what we did was to draw attention to one very important thing. Education right now is not treated like the other sectors. People talk about health. People talk about social protection. People talk about those families or businesses that are really suffering because of the economic fallout from the pandemic. And education does not receive that much attention. And I think that's something that needs to change. And that's a key message that our various publications in recent months are trying to draw attention to. Because there is a really significant risk that children who have spent time now out of school, or they spend time, some of those who are lucky enough to continue their education are still not getting the type of education that they were getting before. Mm. And the poorer you are, the even worse your chances are to get good education continuity. So what is going to happen is they're falling back, but unfortunately education is not a one-off thing. You build on your education. So when you suffer a big gap, this gap that sets you back accumulates over time. So you may be out of school for 3 months.
So you're always playing catch up, basically.
Exactly. And ultimately what's happening is that you may be back by a year in a few years down the line. Even if you manage to stay in education and you don't drop out, you're going to have your chances compromised.
So it's been almost a year since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic, and schools around the world, especially in many sub-Saharan African countries, have been closed. What does the report recommend that needs to be done to for there to be more inclusion in the education systems?
In the current context of the pandemic, it's of course quite a difficult question to answer. In the grand scheme of things, well, the message of the report on inclusion is that inclusion is for everyone. There has been a tendency to think of inclusion in terms of just one population group, children with disabilities, children with special education needs. And that's not enough, because the same mechanisms that exclude children with disabilities are essentially the same that exclude children that belong to a linguistic minority, or girls, or poor children, or refugees. Really, it is about this mentality that sometimes education systems have not to deal very well with diversity. So the core message is that. And in some sense, you see that reflection also in the national responses to the COVID crisis, because all over the world, in poor and rich countries alike, there has been a tendency to jump to the next technological opportunity that this pandemic is offering, you know, this online learning opportunities. It's normal. People try to look into the future. But we forget that in parts of sub-Saharan Africa, not only is there no internet, there's no electricity. Not only is there no electricity, there's no radio. Basically, only 7% of the poorest households in DRC, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, have a radio. The same is true in Ethiopia. So if we jump to these solutions, those that appear attractive, appear to represent the future, at the same time, we're actually opening the rifts in society, because these children have actually no chance whatsoever, even if we were able to offer them access to a nice online learning solution. That doesn't mean we should not pursue them. It's the future.
But as you're pursuing these new technologies, learning technologies, that you should be thinking about those that you're leaving behind. Now, let me ask you this, Manos. Is it enough that that a government has an inclusive national education policy? Is that in itself enough?
Well, it is interesting if countries do that. And it's true that many countries in Africa actually, in our comparative global analysis, came up well. Compared to other parts of the world, governments have been taking an inclusive perspective. And that's actually to the credit of African decision makers. In practice, things fall apart a little bit in the implementation, because it requires also adaptation of the way that education systems are managed. You know, in many countries, there was this idea that, children with disabilities should be educated separately in some other schools, separate schools, not with everyone else. So if you try to bring them into the mainstream school system, then you also need to make sure that you give the resources to these schools to cope with this new challenge.
And build the infrastructure
bring the technical expertise, because you also need different skills for some specialist support personnel to help the teacher. But if there's no such support, a teacher by himself or by herself cannot do everything. So it is often a management problem, just making sure that every school has the support it needs. Countries all over Africa are trying to establish so-called resource centers, or they have itinerant teachers, or they have networks of schools to help each other. Ethiopia is a good example. They're trying to do that. But more needs to be done for every school to have the support it needs.
Now, there's some, you know, analysts that have said that even when you have a robust school system, that there are some beliefs and attitudes that exist in some countries that prevent learners from accessing these educational opportunities. What would you say are some of those belief systems or attitudes that are still preventing equal access to education?
That's a really key point, because inclusion cannot be imposed from top to down through the system. Society needs to also embrace it. A classic example in sub-Saharan Africa is the case of the albinos. There are all sorts of beliefs and discriminating attitudes that are really not based on any evidence, on any reasonable thinking behind it. But people are overwhelmed with certain stereotypes and prejudices that make communities like them really at grave risk. But that's just one example. You can say that the same applies to all sorts of disadvantaged groups that have been marginalized because of the association they have, because they have tended to do some jobs in society, or they speak a language the others don't understand, or there's some historical animosity, or there could be all sorts of reasons. All these obstacles need to be overcome, but you cannot impose them by decree. It's very important to have laws that protect them, that protect their right to education. It's very important to introduce policies that discriminate in their favor so that they receive the support they need to enter school and to go through the education trajectory. But if society doesn't help, if the community does not take the responsibility, you know, another classic example is teenage pregnancy and early marriage. We see examples in Malawi where communities have actually, you know, really taken a firm foot to, you know, weed out you know, practices that were tolerating early marriage. And that is, at the end of the day, also a community responsibility, because the law, the government can only do so much. Unless the community endorses such an approach and makes a commitment and holds each other accountable among its members, then there would be no progress. And that's an essential part of inclusion.
Right. I do remember visiting communities in Masai Mara in Kenya, in these rural communities where young Masai girls were being forced into early marriages. And it took some community members to start building centers where girls would go to seek shelter and you know, escape these practices so as they could continue their education. So I do understand the importance of having community involvement in understanding the need for their, you know, children to be educated.
Let's take a quick break. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
In case you just joined us, welcome. You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. On the line with me from Paris, France, is Manos Antoninis. He's one of the authors of a recent UNESCO Global Education Report. The report warns that millions of youth are excluded from education because of their background or even their ability.
Let me ask you about the Dakar framework for action. I think in 2000, it said that education for all must, quote, take account of the needs of the poor and the most disadvantaged. And when we think about inclusivity, we always think about these two. And then you talked about, you know, the disabled. How has the global community, I'm talking about donor partners, international agencies, overall in the last 20 years, how have they done in to ensure that there is inclusivity in our education systems? And if you were to give some kind of a report.
Now, there are two slightly different issues. Inclusion, first of all, is a process. So, and that means it's a process for every country. No country can say we have achieved our inclusive ideals and we can be happy. For every society, there are some skeletons in the cupboard, as they say. There are some people who are really getting a rough deal. You cannot leave any country out in that respect. The dialogue needs to be open and people need to be open to accept that there are issues that need to be resolved. So in that sense, rich countries, donor countries that have been trying to support poorer countries around the world, themselves are having issues to deal with. And that also reflects the way they have been seeing inclusion. It's a very recent approach to understand inclusion as a quality education for all. I can just tell you that the right to inclusive education was agreed in 2006. There was a United Nations Convention on the Right of Persons with Disabilities. And it took then the committee of the UN that really deals with these issues another 10 years, so just until like 5 years ago, to come up with an interpretation of what does actually inclusive education mean? What is this right? It was them who actually realized that, no, it's not just about one group, it's about everyone. So it's a very recent phenomenon. So even donor countries and even high-income countries, they're still grappling. And there are some high-income countries that actually are doing very badly in the sense that they exclude and they separate a higher percentage of children with special needs in their schools. So it's hard to say, to give a lesson about who should do better. As I said, African countries in many ways, partly also because they have been constrained by limited resources, they have by definition been trying to be more inclusive. There are, of course, problems with those societies that still prefer to hide the child that has a disability, and that's a major obstacle. It's something that societies need to accept. They need to appreciate diversity. They need to see the potential and the value in every person. And that's an area where there must be some more work needs to be done. So that's one aspect. The question of aid is, of course, another difficult question. Over time, it's not that high-income countries, donor countries, have provided more aid to Africa. Over the last 15 years, aid levels have remained fairly flat and well below what countries once committed, or at least some of them committed to do. Their involvement can be important in some sense, not in quantitative terms, not in money terms, but in the way this exchange of experience can possibly help steer policymaking in the right direction. It doesn't always work because donors also have their problems. They are fragmented in the way they approach. They don't agree exactly how to coordinate. Sometimes they compete with each other for influence. So things get sidetracked. But the language of donors when it comes to inclusive education is also changing. And they have definitely given support to a number of non-governmental organizations that have really helped bring the agenda, very high up on the agenda, the issue of inclusion. So these are things that really matter and we should not dismiss them.
Now, are there things that are happening right now during this pandemic when almost half of the school age population is at home, learning from home. Are there things that are happening right now that gives you encouragement that, you know, in a post-COVID world, if that ever exists, if that ever happens, that we will see more inclusivity in education?
That's a very interesting question. We would like to say that, and we would like to see that. I think what seems to be an interesting message is that we see how, under these very difficult circumstances, people have been mistreated. We appreciate more, the mechanisms that have set them on the margin. We also appreciate more the role of teachers. Some teachers have really gone the extra mile, the extra step, to care about the students well outside the classroom, in the community. And that's actually how we would like to see teachers. So this is important as a message that could perhaps, for instance, elevate the role of teacher, the way teachers are seen. Because teachers have always also get a lot of criticism, but maybe it's a chance to appreciate the big contribution they make to society. So that's a message of optimism that we could look forward to.
That was Manos Antoninis with UNESCO. He was speaking to me from his offices in Paris, in France. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Punganyi. Now, we're looking at how the pandemic is affecting education on the continent. And speaking of appreciation, as Mr. Manos was talking about, it is often said that teachers are not appreciated enough, but especially so when we're talking about special needs teachers. Now, with millions of students getting back to school after months of lockdowns, or in other cities where students still have to attend school virtually, parents and educators have had to get creative on how best to support the educational needs of their children as they adapt to this new reality. And that task gets harder if you're a parent with a special needs child or a special needs student. And to find out how educators and parents have had to cope with these challenges, I reached Karabu Chana in Kigali, Rwanda, where she works as a special needs educator and administrator.
You, as an administrator, have you had to restructure some of your processes to meet the educational needs of your students?
For sure. I mean, everyone has had to do that. It's really tricky for children with disabilities to figure out how to do online learning, because that's what the whole school is doing. And usually when there's like a partial lockdown, they're allowed to come to school for in-person learning. But if it's a complete lockdown, they can't come to school. So we've had to figure out how to keep them engaged as much as possible when they're at school. We definitely have to readjust. Yeah.
What are some of the adjustments you've had to make to accommodate this new reality?
Yeah, so this is the place where homeschool relationships have to be really strong, because we rely heavily on the parents to make sure that they show up to the polls on time, to even do some instruction as well. Because for some of our students, they're nonverbal. So communicating through the computer, they're nonverbal and they're also really young. So communicating through the computer or through the screen is really difficult. So we've relied heavily on the parents. And what we do is we send instructional videos to the parents to show them how we usually teach the student a particular, like a really particular objective, like say if it's counting or whatever it is that the student is working on. The teacher who would teach the child makes an instructional video, not for the child, but for the parent. So for the parent to watch and see how it's usually done.
It requires intensive parental participation.
For sure, especially for the younger ones. But
Parental involvement, students, depending on what kind of needs they have, they vary in how effectively they can engage with the technologies. We struggle with, with attention, with intellectual functioning, language, self-regulation. Is it harder on parents that they don't have the help of teachers like yourself to be around, to be physically monitored the education?
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. And I can say from the week that we've been doing it, I think it's a week and a half now, the more severe the disability, the more difficult it is for the parent. There are some households that have more than one child with disabilities. That makes it 100-fold more difficult than if it was just one child. So it is really challenging. But on the other hand, I have to say, we've also experienced some parents that have really showed up, that bring their kids to the Google Classroom meetings with the rest of the class every day. So it's a mix. Some parents really struggle and some parents are really thriving and are doing well. But at the same time, there's a consensus that it's much better if they're doing in-person learning, if they're not the ones doing the teaching.
Is there something that parents and teachers or educators need to do in the way they approach this their educational needs, better to do better? We are learning how to do these things primarily for the first time. We've never had a pandemic in our lifetime. We've never had, you as educators, you've never had to educate during a pandemic. You obviously have ways you collaborate with parents before the pandemic. Are there some things that you would advise parents to do or teachers to do in terms of collaborating?
Yeah, I mean, I think because this is a great example of why it's so important for home to be involved in the education of kids. I think before the pandemic, it's safe to say that parents rely heavily on the schools, on the teachers, to do the educating. But it is really, really important. The more involved a parent is in the education of the child, the easier it is when stuff like this happens. But at the same time, even if there was not a pandemic, it is still really, even research shows, it's much better for the child if the parent is involved in their education. And sometimes I think parents forget the amount of time kids spend at home, because school is part of a routine. You wake up in the morning, you get them dressed, you take them to school, and it feels like they spend a lot of time in school, but they also spend a lot of time at home. So it is to, what I would advise parents to do is to understand that, pandemic or no pandemic, it is very important for you to be as involved as possible in your child's education. So I can tell you, I think special education parents or parents with children with disabilities are some of the most involved parents in their children's education, because that's the nature of the system. We do plans together, we do check-ins within the term, and so on and so forth. So, but at the same time, there can always be more. So I would say the only advice I could give is be more involved. So ask more questions, show up to the parent-teacher conferences.
Carol, thank you very much.
No problem.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to my guests, Manos Antoninis with UNESCO in Paris, France. And many thanks to Carol Wichana, a special needs educator and administrator based in Kigali, Rwanda. And many thanks to our listeners who have been tuning in from around the world. whether you've been listening in online or on radio, on FM or shortwave, I want to thank you and appreciate you. Be sure to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on YouTube, and you can connect with me on Twitter at Afron Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi, wishing you all a great week ahead. This is